This is The Camp with Zach Heilprin and The Athletic's Jesse Temple.
Yes, welcome in. Spring ball officially here. I guess it was officially here a couple weeks ago, but we weren't there. We were covering basketball at the time, Jesse. But now we have our first look at the 2024 Badgers spring ball. I'm sure things will look a whole lot different come fall, but we did get our first look at so many new guys. And I know we were standing next to each other and both of us would look up and then have to look down to look at the roster and see who is who and what number is what. And it was, you know, guys lined up all over the place. It was, it's not easy. I'm not going to complain about doing it, but it's not easy to continue to have this turnover of guys just running through them. So many new freshmen, so many new transfers. I guess this is just college football, but it's not easy. It's not easy keeping track of everything like that.
I was reminded at this time of the year, as I probably will be for the foreseeable future, given where college football is headed, of the scene from Major League where they're looking at the roster, the fans are, and they say, who are these bleeping guys? Right. It's just, they've got 11 early enrollees that are freshmen. And obviously they brought in 15 transfers. So that's the bulk of the team, and guys you're used to wearing old numbers aren't there anymore. So it'll take a little getting used to, but I will say, certainly from the transfer perspective, a number of those newcomers are going to be big time contributors based on some of the lineups and some of the plays that they've been able to make.
Yeah. So I think we should kind of just run through this a little bit, give people an idea where some guys are lined up. And it's also worth noting that whole ton of rotating on both sides of the ball that I don't know that outside of a few spots, you can say, well, that guy's going to be a starter for sure. And like, you know, Hunter Wolder's going to be on the field a lot this fall, right? Like we know that. And we know that Ches Belusi is right now going to be on the field quite a bit. We know the starting offensive linemen with like Jack Nelson and Jake Renfro and Joe Huber and Riley Mullen. We know those guys are gonna play a lot, but there's some other spots where there's just a lot of rotating and a lot of those new faces. And I think we need to start with the quarterback position because that is where a lot of people's focus is going to be. Tanner Mordecai is gone. They bring in Tyler Van Dyke. Unlike last year Tanner Mordecai came in and was the dude and was the guy and was unquestioned, and Braden Locke was the unquestioned number two. I think there's a lot of question with that number one job at quarterback. And I don't know that we saw anything today that's, you know, that jumped out and said, oh yeah, this guy's feels like he's got a little bit of an advantage here. Braden Locke and Tyler Van Dyke shared first team reps throughout the entire practice. And I don't know that we're going to see a huge, huge difference in that share as we go through spring ball.
Yeah, if you're listening and looking for a recap of a lot of big time plays, this is not the episode for you. That's not to say you shouldn't listen. Obviously, there's a lot to digest.
Sell a little bit better. Come on now.
But there was a lot of running plays, not a ton of big pass plays. So I say that just to mention that it is a little bit harder in a practice like this to definitively say, oh, look what this guy brings to the table. He did something that the other guy didn't. That's not really what this kind of practice was, but I certainly think that is a notable development if spring practice starts, that both these guys are splitting reps with the first team offense. And then what's ended up happening is it gives Nick Evers a chance to get a lot of those two reps where he just wasn't in the mix at all last year. So it's good for competition with the ones in Tyler and Braden, but I think it's also a really good situation for Nick Evers, and then in turn gives maybe Mattire a chance to get some snaps with the threes, and Cole LaCruz been out with injury. But obviously this is a situation that's much different from a year ago, because Tanner Mordecai came in and from day one was the starter and Braden Locke was the number two, and that was never going to change. And I think this will be, I think from the Badgers perspective, a good thing for both of those guys. Now, if you're a fan, you probably would like to have someone like a Tyler Van Dyke come in and immediately establish himself and show he's that guy who was the ACC Rookie of the Year 3 years ago. I think it's going to take a little bit of time in this offense. Certainly has great arm strength and can deliver good passes, but you know, it's a feeling out process right now. And Braden Locke is going to be able to challenge in part because of the fact he's got a year in this offense. I think that makes a substantial difference, especially at this time of the year. I also thought it was notable that we had a chance to talk to Luke Fickell after practice, and he was asked about Van Dyke. And one of the things that he said was he'd like to see Tyler come out of his shell, not just as a football player, but as a leader as well. And I found that statement to be interesting in part because I'm juxtaposing against what we remember Tanner Mordecai was like. And obviously all the praise that Luke Fickell had for him. That's not to say Luke doesn't have praise for Tyler, but I think there's a little bit longer way to go with Van Dyke to be that guy.
Yeah, that really jumped out to me too. The needs to come out of a shell a little bit. And again, we'll see it. Tanner Mordecai was just, you know, came in right away and just established himself as a presence, as a leader, as all those things. And, you know, again, that's not saying that Tyler can't come in and do that as spring ball continues, but it felt like Tanner did that almost right away last year. So it is interesting. Also, I thought Nick Evers looked a lot more in control. As you mentioned, there was not a ton of passing, but I thought some of the throws that he did make, there was a little bit more control of the offense, I thought, with him. And maybe that'll continue on as the offense expands and we get to see more of it throughout the spring. But small steps, right? Small steps in the right direction for Nick Evers, I think. I don't know how you feel about that. Again, we didn't see a ton.
No, I absolutely agree. And Luke was also asked about Nick and talked about how he's grown up and had to battle through what Luke called the young guy stuff last year when he walked in the door, which we know what that is because we had a chance to talk to Nick about it. And he was pretty honest, not only with himself, but with us about the fact that he came in last spring and wasn't necessarily putting himself in the best position to be locked in and understand the playbook in the way that he needed to. And it showed. That's why he didn't get the reps. As Phil Longo's put on a whiteboard of the past, knowledge equals reps. And Nick certainly appears to be better in that area. We'll see what it looks like should he get an opportunity against the ones. I think there's a lot of, like you said, rotating where you're not even just going against twos all the time, but sometimes threes. But the fact that he seems to have a better grasp and therefore can execute the plays and have better decision making is huge because the throws, that arm strength and the speed and athleticism are the traits that to me were always going to separate him here. He still has the best athleticism of any guy in the group. And if a play breaks down, can create something out of nothing, but you've got to be able to know exactly what Phil Longo wants you to do when he's asking something on a specific play.
Yeah. So we got to see a lot more Ches Malusi today than I think a lot of us were expecting to throughout the spring. And he wanted to be out there. That's what Luke Fickell said. He wanted to be out there and he wanted the opportunities. So he was getting hit. He was getting tackled in certain situations, which obviously should not have been getting tackled because you're not supposed to be tackling right now. But that led to some fisticuffs at points, not necessarily with him, but some of his teammates and otherwise. And we'll get to that in a second. But behind Ches Malusi, the two guys that really stand out because they're new, but they're also just bowling balls. And that is, Gideon Ituka and Tyree Walker.
I got to be honest. I said this out loud when we were watching practice, but I legitimately saw a number 31. And again, still getting used to who's who, what position are they playing? And in my mind, I said, is that one of the new linebackers? And no, it was Gideon Ituka. All 5'9", 235 pounds of him. So didn't get
absolute
to see
load.
A ton of big plays again, and he's getting more of those reps with the young guys. But both of those guys, like you said, big downhill runners, and they're going to get the reps because even though Ches is back, like Luke said afterward, with a fifth-year guy, a sixth-year guy, I don't think you need all the reps. You just need enough to be comfortable. And with Ches, obviously he's been out since week four against Purdue. What is it like to be hit? What is it like to kind of get the competitive juices flowing again? But I still think this spring is going to be a great opportunity for guys like Walker and Ituka and obviously Cade Iacomelli and maybe to a lesser extent Nate White, although I certainly like his speed. Get those carries and to see what they can do.
Yeah, get those carries now because again, I think a lot of people are very excited about the other two guys that are not here yet.
Yeah.
And Dylan Jones and in Darian Dupree. So we'll see how that whole thing works out. Wide receiver wise, they rolled through guys, right? We saw CJ Williams get reps with the ones. I feel like there's two spots that I don't want to say are locked in, but Will Pauling's going to be your starting slot. And then likely probably Bryson Green on one side. And then, CJ Williams was a starting guy on the other side, but they also have rolled Quincy Burroughs through there. And then we know that Tretch Kekahuna getting time in the slot. We got to see that today. Again, not a ton of passing plays that we had an opportunity to see how this is all going to play out. But I could not be more intrigued and more excited, even though I'm keeping my expectations low this offseason, as we've discussed. Very, very low, low expectations. We're going to make them make plays, and we're going to wait and see. We're not going to say, gosh, this is what happened in spring, so it's going to happen in fall. Nope, not going to do that. That said, Tretch Kakahuna and Will Pullen on the field together, yes, please.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Should also mention Vinny Anthony was getting the one reps on the outside as well. And when practice started, I think it was Vinny and Bryson on the outside and Will Pauling was in the slot. But obviously, like you said, a lot of rotations. And that, to me, what you're talking about with the slots, fascinating. Because we saw what Tretch did in the bowl game. The dude hadn't played any offensive snaps. He comes in and he has more receiving yards in that game than any game that Skylar Bell had last season. And obviously, Tretch had four catches. So he's shown that he's got that skill set, that speed. But you put him and Pauling on the field together, and certainly seems like that's going to be in the plans when the season gets rolling. That's got to be really difficult to defend.
Yeah, I think they got something special in those two guys, and I know that they used a lot of the two slots last year, right? Like, we know that Skylar Bell and Will Pauling lined up together, but I think Tretch Kakahuna after the catch, and I guess maybe even before the catch, is a better fit than Skylar Bell was last year. He's obviously not as big as Skylar Bell, and I know maybe not top speed at the level of Skylar Bell, but quickness and make guys miss type of stuff, I think, is going to be at a different level than what we saw from Skylar Bell. Like, I don't envision him averaging less than, you know, 10 yards a catch, right? Like, Skylar was way under that, right? I mean, he was at 7 or 8 yards a catch last year. I don't envision that happening with Tretch Kakahuna, especially when they have them both on the field at the same time. But it's an intriguing group, that's for sure. At tight end, they didn't have Tucker Ashcraft today. He was with the rehab group dealing with some stuff. So it was Riley Nowakowski, it was JT Seagreaves, it was then some of the young guys. Did any of the young guys stand out to you at all today?
No, we didn't have a chance to see him a ton. Grant Steck is just a massive dude. And I think as a blocker, man, he can really blow some people up. We didn't have a chance.
Oh, he got some inside drill work and he put a guy in his butt. He did. I'm trying to remember which I said it when I saw it, and I can't remember who it was. It was a linebacker. Put him on his butt. He's got that kind of juice.
Yeah. I just really like him. I didn't see Rob Booker until the very end in some of the young guys' situations. And I was a little surprised. JT Seagreaves, to me, felt like got a lot of the one reps, but again, still very early, and you don't have Tucker Ashcraft there. So we know they've got to have more playmakers there. And Jackson McGowan, I think I saw him with like the threes just briefly. Now, that's not an indicator of what it's going to look like in the fall, but that's just where things are right now. I don't know that I can say they've got that big play threat, which, do you need that at Wisconsin? We've seen some really good Wisconsin teams where they had a big play tight end type of guy who was a safety valve, and I know it's a different kind of offense, but you'd certainly like to have someone who will catch more than 11 passes, which is what the team leader had last year at that position in Hayden Rucci.
Yes, I would agree. So offensive line, I mentioned that, you know, feel good about the guys just in terms of the names, maybe not.
Yeah.
We'll see what the play looks like. I'm not going to sit here and say I feel good about the play, but you know the names, right? Jack Nelson at left tackle and Joe Brunner kind of moving into a starting role this year at left guard. You had Jake Renfrew at center. You had Joe Heber at right guard and Riley Malman at right tackle. It's behind them where I think obviously the questions are, because there are so many young guys. So how many of these guys that came in early are now like in the two deep, because they just don't have very many bodies behind them. And I wonder, I mean, an injury here or there, I'm not going to go over the top here, but you could end up playing true freshman this year if you have an injury or two in spots, just as of right now is what I'm saying. And maybe they look at the portal and maybe try and add a veteran offensive lineman this off, you know, after when the portal opens for football here. What is that? Is it April 15th that it opens?
I think April 16th, and then for 15 days, so through the end of the month.
Yeah, so I mean, I could maybe see that if they could find somebody that'd be willing to come in and do that. It's kind of like the Chris Vogt situation, where in basketball we were trying to get a guy that wants to come in and, you know, why are you in the transfer portal? Well, I want to play more. I don't like my situation. I want to play more. How many are you going to get those guys to come in and be like your sixth or seventh guy along the offensive line? Probably not too many, but there is a lot of young bodies behind the veterans of this offense line right now.
Yeah, this was another situation where I'm looking at my notes and I literally just typed LT for left tackle 55, LG 65, because I just didn't have time to wrap my mind around who's actually playing there. But Kevin Haywood is getting the second team reps at left tackle. Obviously a tremendous high school player, a big time recruiting win for Wisconsin, a 4-star prospect. And then you've got James Duran playing left guard, who was, I think, was he hurt
center
last year?
He was and he was working at center last year too.
Yeah. So, and you got a couple walk-ons in there. Now JP Benchwall is at right guard, but absolutely there is not a lot of experience there. And the other thing is you've got, they signed 5 scholarship freshmen on the offensive line and only a couple of them are early enrollees. So that certainly would help. I think even Luke said this, you'd love to have all of them here right now. Now that's not how it has worked out, but just to give depth and also get those guys experience. But it is an intriguing situation for Wisconsin, because whereas like last year, and this didn't always happen, but remember when Jack McNeil Jr. was talking about how he felt like they could play 7 or 8 guys. If you start asking, well, if you wanted to play 7 or 8 guys, who would those guys be? I don't know that you could definitively say who that is, but for a starting group, a lot of the names that you know, and that's encouraging, but you've got to get this second group and to a lesser extent third group just ready, just in case, because we see this every year at Wisconsin, but in football at large, someone's going to get hurt at a major position that you're going to have someone capable of stepping in and not having a drop off. Otherwise, everyone's going to suffer.
Yeah, I mean, they were actually pretty lucky along the line last year, were they not?
Yep, absolutely.
Like we always said, like, oh yeah, there's always going to be a guy that's going to miss time. No one really missed time. Obviously Jake Renfro, the injury, but the starting group, it didn't happen. So you were kind of testing fate, or, you know, last year there are going to be injuries this year, and you're going to have guys who are going to be able to step in. And that's where I think the concern depth wise is. And the depth also on the guys that they're going against, the defensive line is also there as well, right? Like you have James Thompson Jr. and Ben Barton and Kurt Neal rotating with the first group, and then a lack of experience after that, right? You have a couple of guys that, you know, okay, McDonald, who played some football last year, but the depth there is also still a major concern, even as we look at the new guys that they brought in, whether it's Elijah Hills or some of the, or the Ertis Wilner coming in the 2024 class. The depth there is, I think, concerning.
Yeah, it's depth, and it's also the same thing to me that it was last year, is the playmaking. I mean, you can rotate, like they talked about last season, we're going to rotate 8 guys, and they kind of did that. If it wasn't 8, it was like 6, 7. But it's one thing to rotate. It's another to have guys that are just going to be disruptive forces. I think we certainly saw some of that from James Thompson Jr., the only defensive lineman who had more than 1 sack. But right now, there are a lot of question marks there. And like you said, there may be 3 guys that are getting first-team reps. You have TJ Bowlers there getting 2 reps, but just transitioned to D-line late last season and is certainly bulked up. So I'm interested to see what he looks like with an offseason entirely at that position. Maybe he should have been at that position to begin with. Who knows? Mike Jarvis is in there too. So there's a lot of bodies, but certainly questions about who can be playmakers. And I was a little bit surprised, and again, this is only 1 practice, but Elijah Hills, the FCS transfer, was with the reserves and you know, almost with the 3s on occasion, but I think he did get some 2 reps as well. But again, they rotated a bunch of guys at all those positions.
They did. Did you know that Wisconsin had 2 SEC starting, or, you know, 2 SEC capable defensive linemen on their line last year?
In Gio Paez. And Rodas Johnson.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's impressive.
Well, let's see how much they play this season. let's just, you know, give it some
time. So we talk about some of the concerns at defensive line. I think there's a excitement level at the next level of the defense at linebacker, where they overhauled both spots, but really, you know, I know Luke Fickell said this when we talked to him, but the inside linebacker room is just completely different. Now, it's still led by Jake Chaney, and he is the clear starter at one of those spots. But when you have Tackett Curtis and Jaheim Thomas and Christian Allegro, and even some of the younger guys behind them, whether it's Tyler Janzy and Landon Goth here, there are just a ton of bodies at inside linebacker, and we saw a ton of guys get work today.
Yeah, and what Luke said was, when he was asked about the talent that was added specifically at inside linebacker, he said, if there was the biggest difference in one group, it might be there, is how he put it, which is pretty hard to deny. Obviously, you don't have Mumajong Mehta anymore, Jordan Turner, and you brought in guys like Tackett Curtis and Jaheim Thomas, both guys who've started games, and Sebastian Cheeks from UNC, the other transferred inside linebacker. But there's an awful lot of talent there. I thought it was really interesting that, at least at the start, the two guys who were in the top group were Jake Chaney and Christian Allegro, who we know this staff really likes. Talk about that length and athleticism and all that. He got some run last season and certainly in the bowl game. I don't know if that's going to hold. Jaheim Thomas certainly going to have something to say about that, and the same with Tackett Curtis. Now, Tackett is just really coming back. I don't think he was a full participant in the first practice, and we got to see him in some live reps today. Was coming off some off-season surgery. But there is a lot to like about that group. I was talking about the question marks about playmaking on the defensive line. At least you know you've got guys who have been in games and who have made plays. And Jake Chaney certainly shouldn't be forgotten in this mix. Was he the second returning leading tackler? Something like that, second or third?
Would it be the leading guy coming back? Or no, because Hunter Waller was...
Well, Hunter Waller. Yeah. So I think maybe he was second in tackles last season. I should have been looking at my stats while talking about this. But yeah, there's a lot there. And I'm sure this will naturally transition into the outside linebacker, which is even more exciting to me.
It will, but I want to, before we do this, you mentioned Tackett Curtis getting some reps.
Yeah.
He did get some reps. And one of the final reps that he got was a running play. And Cade Iacomelli, they're not supposed to be tackling, but that did stop Tackett Curtis. He ripped Iacomelli to the ground. Iacomelli took offense, and there were some blows thrown between those two. And it was not the first time. And I think that's where I wanted to talk about this real quick, because it obviously involved the linebackers, inside and outside linebackers, getting into it with running backs, getting into it with offensive players. You saw it earlier in practice with Jackson Aker and Leon Lowry throwing punches, like literally throwing punches. Again, helmets on, doesn't make any sense to me, but that's what they were doing. And we've seen a bunch of it. And Luke Fickell opened up his press conference after the practice talking about how competitive situations and how competitive they want these situations to be. And they certainly are. And then I asked him later on, like, competition, right? Like, I understand the competition, but there, you know, it feels like it's led to some of these fisticuffs. Are you okay with that? And he laughed and he's like, well, no, off the record, yes. So, and then he explained kind of like the idea behind it, like, just, you know, we want guys to play it on edge. We want them to be able to go all the way to that edge without actually stepping over that edge, because we want to be a disciplined team, but we want guys to play with fire and play with that type of energy. And sometimes it'll lead to that stuff. But almost all the fights, I wouldn't even call them fights, but like dust ups, were the result of like guys going a little bit harder than maybe we have seen in the past.
I thought it was a very intense practice. And I know when we were talking about, well, was it more intense than last year? I do think there's something to be said for the fact that last year, everyone's head was spinning. We certainly had that experience, but I think the players did too, because everything was so new. And yes, there are a lot of newcomers in the mix here, but there are a lot of guys who have been here. And I just think there's a better overall understanding of what this is going to be like. And that can allow you to play a little bit faster and perhaps with a little bit more intensity. But I mean, even early in practice, they were doing full on tackling situations, like near like inside run stuff. And so all of it is in this idea of creating that competition. And it's something that Luke talked about last spring, and especially that idea of playing to the edge, but not going over it. Can remember some situations where you might have a guy go over that edge and have to run a lap or two. But that is part of it, because like he talked about, if you do that in a game, you're going to be penalized, and you need your teammates to be able to step in. As Luke described it, sometimes guys lose their minds, and that is not a good thing, but you need people who can kind of pull them back. On the other hand, this is the stuff that I feel like is usually reserved for the end of spring or like week three of fall camp when guys are tired of each other. So if anything, I think it means it's going to be an entertaining spring with guys really going at it and fighting for spots.
I will say, I think it's notable that it was transfers coming in.
Yeah.
Were involved in, I feel like, all three of the ones that we saw today. Leon Lowry, obviously one of them, and Tack Curtis in the other. And there was another, but I'm can't remember which. I don't think I wrote that one down, but there have, I think the transfers have certainly maybe changed the tone of things a little bit. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just it's changed the tone a little bit. And let's talk about some of the outside linebackers, because those are also where some of the new faces and bodies are, with Leon Lowry and John Pius. They kind of both saw time with the first team defense. We know that Darryl Peterson is the returning guy there, and he feels established at one of those spots, but they rotated a ton of guys through there too, including everyone's favorite, Aaron Witt. For the first, again, for the, this, I may have missed a practice or two, but this is the first time, and he's been here since 2020. This is the first time that I've seen him practice. And that's kind of crazy, but it was also great to see, because he brings some energy to it. He does it. He has a little bit of a different juice. And when he makes a play, he lets people know about it. And he made a play today where he just destroyed one of the tight ends that was pulling around on a run, and he just destroyed him, and it kind of blew up the play. I don't know how much he's going to end up getting on the field, and hopefully he can stay healthy, but him and some of these other new faces, exciting to see on this defense.
Yeah. Luke said that when Aaron came back late last season, because he did play very briefly in that bowl game that Aaron had mentioned.
I was saying, like, I hadn't seen a practice with him.
Yeah.
Like, because, right. Because, like, in the fall of 2020, we didn't get to see practice because of COVID. So this was the first practice. I know we got to see him in games last year.
Right. But my point is that when Aaron came back around that time, he had said something to Luke about that he hadn't practiced in like 500 or 600 some days, which is just insane to think about. But that's the journey that he's been on, where he just missed multiple full seasons. And way back in the Duke's Mayo Bowl era, you saw a glimpse and just wondered, well, are we ever going to see that again? But you're right. There is a competitiveness to him and a physicality, which is also something that Luke talked about. It's physicality and intensity. And it's hard to say right now what that role is going to be. Certainly, they didn't bring John Pius in and Leon Lowry in to sit. And both those guys, like you talked about, were getting some one reps rotating in while Darryl Peterson was on the other side. But I think Witt certainly can be a factor. He does bring something a little bit different. You don't see guys built like that who play that position. And so even if he gives them anything, I mean, it's obviously to me already a win for Witt that he's been able to come back, because I honestly just didn't think that was going to happen. When you go years, just kind of felt like it wasn't in the cards. But now they've got a pretty good group at outside, and the goal there obviously is to just be more impactful, which again is another thing that Luke talked about, is you want to get more out of that group, and they feel like they've got an opportunity to do that now this season.
Yeah, again, a lot of running plays, so we didn't get to see pass rush a ton of, but I certainly think in some of the one-on-one pass rush drills, you can see that they could be an issue for tackles. I certainly do think both Leon Lowry and John Pius could certainly be issues for tackles. And I don't know that we saw a ton of issues for tackles last year from Wisconsin's side of things. And that's just whether guys weren't ready or you know, weren't able, or the defense was asking for different things. I don't know that we saw a ton of that last year. I'll mention one more thing before we move on to a different position. Thomas Heiberger, Duke can run.
Yes.
That dude can run. And I know the whole offseason was all about length and athleticism, getting longer, getting that type of stuff, kind of bringing in more Christian Allegros. And Thomas Heiberger was kind of mentioned in that. The time that Nick Evers, he broke out of the pocket and was trying to get around the edge, Thomas Heiberger was running step for step with him. It was one of the more impressive things from the defense I saw this today was just he was not going to get it around him. And that type of athleticism, an outside linebacker, huge for Wisconsin. And I know you're sometimes giving something away with that athleticism, maybe your ability to hold the point of attack, but that athleticism just jumped off the charts jumped off the field and hit me in the face when he was able to do that today. It was very impressive.
That was one of the plays that stood out to me as well. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Heiberger was on the far side of the field. So Evers rolled to his left and he came all the way across and stuck with him. And Evers didn't end up with anything. And we know if anyone's going to create something at quarterback, it's Evers. So a very brief glimpse of Heiberger, but you can see why they like him so much and feel like he can fit into their plans in the future.
Yeah. So cornerback is another position that a lot of faces from last year are back and they have some new faces, but Ricardo Holman recovering from offseason shoulder surgery. So he is not taking part in spring, which obviously allows some other guys to step in. Nizir Forkerine was at one corner and it was Jonas Taclona at the other corner. And then in the slot was Austin Brown. So some of the stuff that we saw in the bowl game, at least from Austin Brown, I'm intrigued by some of the guys behind them, right? Amari Snowden is a guy that I don't know that we saw a ton of today, but is still so intriguing with his size. And then, you know, bringing in what you did with RJ Delancey, a guy who is really bulked up and right now is on the outside. We'll see what they want to do. But Max Lofi is a guy that we hadn't seen practice, I feel like, for the last 2 years. And he was out there too. So there are so many new bodies there for them to be able to work with.
Yeah, Delancey is somebody that Fickell talked about, came in at 178 and he said he was 192. He's listed at 188 on the roster, but so far they have him playing in the boundary corner. I don't know what you thought, Zach, but my assumption was that they had got him to play in the slot, even though he had played both in the slot and on the outside at his previous school. But I just thought, well, you're losing Jason Maitre. Maybe you want to continue to have Austin Brown play in safety. It just makes sense, but that's not what they've done so far. Now that certainly could change, but I also know they like a bigger body who can play a lot of different types. And Austin Brown gives them that. And he did that in the bowl game. So that's an interesting wrinkle early on. And there weren't, again, a lot of big plays, but Nizir Forkerine did have a nice interception. Braden Locke threw a pass on the left side. It was like Vinny Anthony was in front, Forkerine was behind him, and they both kind of got their hands on the ball, and it tipped into the air, and Forkerine picked it off, and suppose it would have gone for a touchdown. Who knows? So that was one of one of the few big plays that happened, but it's going to look a lot different when Ricardo Holman comes back. And if he can play at the level that he did last season, and not only that, but build on it, then you've got a lot of good pieces to work with at cornerback.
Yeah. I think Josh Close can be hard to keep off the field, but I think we saw that in the bowl game, him getting those opportunities, and we'll see. I think that's going to be a battle. I do. Obviously, Ricardo Hallman's going to be one of your starters, but I think Taclona and Forkerine will battle for that other starting job, and then we'll see what happens in the slot. You're right about wanting a bigger body, but that may be also why I kind of built Delancey up a little bit this offseason too, right? Mm-hmm. So he could perhaps be in that spot right now, though, on the outside. At safety, what you have is the two known commodities in Hunter Wohler and Kamoi Latu. And then it's some interesting combinations behind him.
Yeah. And Preston Zachman is not practicing right now. I think he's recovering from some sort of injury. So that's why
he was with rehab
group today.
Name.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, the twos is really intriguing because they're both young guys that I think have a lot of potential. And that would be Braden Moore and Justin Taylor. And we saw Moore a little bit get some reps. They put him in the, if I'm not mistaken, in the slot last spring, right? He was an early enrollee just to get him on the field. But he was a four-star kid that they got. And I think Taylor is a really dynamic athlete who can play a lot of different spots. So we didn't necessarily see them make a ton of plays, but just the fact that you've got two young guys who were true freshmen last year in the two deep, at least at this point, is always interesting to see how those guys develop.
Yeah, for sure. So we didn't get to see any special teams today, at least kicking that we could actually talk about the kickers. But they did
punting
they
of footballs that hit the roof.
Right. Yes, punting the yes, exactly. And that is why they're building a $325 million practice facility so they can no longer hit the ball with the roof when they punt. That's the only reason behind it. No, kidding, of course. But there were some other things that happened since the last time we did a show, and that was a couple of guys decommitting.
Yes.
Right? Last week it was Torin Pettaway, the defensive lineman from Middleton, 3 weeks after committing, decommits, and a half a minute after decommitting, committed Minnesota and PJ Fleck. And I will refrain from commenting on a 17-year-old's thought process that goes into making that decision. But based on my previous comments about PJ Fleck, I'm sure you can figure that out. And then also yesterday, Cody Haddad, the safety/athlete from Cleveland, announced he was decommitting. Now his commitment came back in January, and 2 days later, he got offered by Ohio State, and then I believe Colin Hitchell left about that same time as well. So yep. Some things have changed for him. I don't necessarily think it was a huge surprise to see him decommit, especially after that Ohio State offer. Feels like a kid that grew up wanting to play for Ohio State, and I imagine that will be where he ends up. But I know that you asked Fickell about a couple of decommits and whether that's just what high school recruiting is now nowadays.
And that's what he said. That's some of what high school is right now. You've got 17-year-olds making these decisions. And what he talked about is wondering about what kind of guidance people are getting and the conversations they have. But he did talk about, and look, it's kind of strange because you have grown men who make a lot of money, whose professions and success depend on how well they are able to recruit teenagers. I mean, it's just what it is. But those teenagers are making these decisions, and sometimes it doesn't seem like they make sense in the moment, but he talked about how you can tend to, as he calls it, ride the wave, like with every single up and down, and that can cause you a lot of sleepless nights. But he also said that we'll end up with the right ones. And he talked about how even last year they were some decommits. Sometimes guys decommit and come back into the fold, like Rob Booker II obviously did. But it's not the best week on the recruiting front, just because it's never good to have a decommitment. The most bizarre one out of the two, clearly, is the Torin Pettaway one. It just, I don't know if we'll get an explanation in the near future, certainly on the record. I can tell you I've reached out to him. I feel like every day since the decommitment, have not heard back from his high school coach. So like, it's almost odd that no one is talking about it and that he hasn't talked about it to anyone. Makes you wonder like what went into that decision, because he just committed to Wisconsin like 3 weeks ago. And I did talk to him when he had gotten the offer and was coming off a visit, really liked Wisconsin. He's a Middleton kid. He liked it so much that he came to a junior day on Saturday and then decided he wanted to come back on Sunday to watch a basketball game. So I'm not sure what necessarily changed that makes him feel like Minnesota is the spot for him. The Cody Haddad one, we saw the writing on the wall. Anytime you scrub from social media your commitment, even if you don't announce you've decommitted, that is not a good sign. And that obviously happened in recent weeks with him. I reached out to his high school coach just to see what's going on, what's his thought process, what's he looking for. And the high school coach said that he hadn't spoken to Cody and that therefore didn't have any information about his decision or what he's looking for. But I think it definitely makes sense if an Ohio kid gets an Ohio State offer, and that, I know there have been forecasts for him to commit there. It feels like things were heading in that direction, but like, I don't know what could Wisconsin do differently? I don't know that there is anything you can do. Sometimes this is just what happens when you get early commitments, especially knowing that recruiting never ends. The truth is, this is college football, and Wisconsin is going to get guys who were previously committed to other schools. It's just unfortunate for the Badgers that they happen to lose two guys within a short time frame. Wisconsin does still have seven commits in that 2025 class, and I think they're off to a good start, but you just lost a defensive lineman and a DB, and you're going to have to go find them somewhere else.
Yeah, that's just what it is. That's just what it is. All right, so I said we were going to put out an episode. I got a few questions that at least I will throw out here and see if we can't talk about them. CT Badgers, he said, worth watching. For the past four seasons, the defense has generally outplayed the offense in 11-on-11 spring game fall camp. The lack of explosiveness and sustained success seems to be a predictor of the regular season. I get that the defense is familiar with the offense, but is this a thing?
Is this a thing that the defense has been ahead of or better than the offense in recent years?
No. Is it a sign that that is how this season will play out? Because of the lack of success in practice, it has kind of rolled over into the game and the lack of success offensively for the last 4 years.
It's really hard to say. I kind of feel like if you're a fan, you just want the offense to be completely dominant, but I think you'd be a little worried about your defense if that was the case. I don't
think about last year.
There were a ton of big plays. Yeah. So I don't know that it's, and especially in spring ball, a big predictor of what you're going to see. I do think when you get into fall camp and they're really going at it, especially like week two, then maybe you start to think about it. Like, I mean, how many years were there where you were watching the quarterback play and you were thinking like, feel like it should be a little bit better. And then it wasn't all that much better on the field. So I'm not going to put too much stock.
Happened every year.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'm not going to put too much stock into what happens in spring ball, but it is a noted CT Badger.
This is not necessarily a question, but there were a lot of people that are not pleased with the idea that Braden Lock could potentially be competing for the starting quarterback job. Where are you on that?
I'm fine with it. I mean, again, if you want to create competition right now and you feel like it's open, then you do this. Is it that people wouldn't be pleased because they think Nick Evers is better than him or will put the team in a better position to win? Or is it because they're not pleased because they just think you brought in a transfer just like Tanner Mordecai and he should be able to take the reins right away? And what are we doing having a competition?
I think it's a Braden Lock thing. I think it's a maybe not being overly impressed with what they got from Braden Lock last year. And then he's in the competition. What does that say about the quarterback position?
Okay. Yeah, I understand that. He ended up completing 50% of his passes. On the other hand, it was his first real college games and they just straight up threw him in there and he's throwing 50 times a game. It's a hard one to answer. I think he's a good quarterback and I think he's going to show a lot of improvement. And it's not just what did we spend all year talking about, the knowledge of the offense, but being able to execute and play at the speed that you need to play at. I still think it's going to be Tyler Van Dyke's job. And I don't think this is like a just a lip service type of thing. I mean, I think obviously they really do believe both guys are worthy of having an opportunity, but you can't deny the experience that Van Dyke has had. And even if he only went 15-13 at Miami and was benched last year, there were a lot of really good moments, I think, for him at Miami. But he's got to go out and take it. Like, that's the other thing. So that's kind of where I'm at on it right now. It's just so early that they're trying to get everybody reps.
Okay. Well, we'll see how it plays out. We've got 13 more practices to watch here over the next month. We'll also be getting interviews with players and coaches on the days that they're not practicing. So they will be back on the field on Thursday and then again on Saturday. And we're not going to be going every day like we did last spring, but we'll be doing regular episodes throughout the weeks here leading to the rest, I guess, to May. Gosh, spring ball ending in May, right? Isn't that accurate?
Yeah, May 2nd. We got a whole month of this bad boy.
Yeah, so we'll be back doing plenty of stuff on spring ball and talking all about it. And please make sure to tune in. And then we'll be at Monks on Thursday for Temple and Heilprin, one of our last opportunities to be out there this year. So looking forward to it. That's from 6 to 7. If you are looking for a place to watch the Final Four, great place to do it. Jesse? Thank you very much. We'll be back later this week.
Thanks, Zach. Talk soon.
All right. There he is. Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp.